Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right. We're going to do a little bit of reflection upon the industry and this business here, because I got to tell you, sometimes sports media is bordering on insane and completely irrational. And, I know I'm a part of it, so I always have to be, like, careful how I word this and phrase this, because I don't want to bash anybody else, and I also don't want to look like a massive hypocrite, right? So there have been plenty of times where I've been caught up in a moment. Or there have been plenty of times where maybe I got a little ahead of myself and had to walk back something I've said. In general, I have strong opinions. I have to do what I do. But I always, or almost always, try to be really rational about them and have substance behind them. And I'm just telling you what I believe and think, the truth as I know it at the time, right? It's not... Now, look, part of this business is performance, too, right? So I'm not going to tell you I don't perform. I definitely perform. But the substance of what I'm saying is what I believe. The substance of what I'm saying is what I've thought about and and I'm not a dumb guy, so there's generally logic and reason and evidence to support what I'm saying. Of course, then I try to deliver it in the most entertaining fashion, because it is the entertainment business. I say all that because there is just like this predictable almost hysteria that comes along with reactions to things. And I would say a good example of that is post game one of the NBA Finals and the talk about Kevin Durant. Talk about Kevin Durant post game one of the NBA Finals. Because we've spent like basically weeks watching the Warriors without Durant, right? I mean, he got hurt. When did he get hurt? Before the Portland series, at the end of the Rockets series, game five of the Rockets series he got hurt in? Yeah, game five of the Rockets series. So a few weeks back, Kevin Durant goes down. I think it's almost been 4 weeks now. And the original thing was, oh man, can Houston win this series now? And then Golden State wins that series, and the news cycle for a bit was about the Rockets and their failure and the like. And we'll actually get to the Rockets a little bit later. But the Warriors kept going. And they got rid of Portland easily. And then the talk spun to how good the Warriors looked even without Durant. And that wasn't that surprising to me, to be honest with you. I mean, we had seen the Warriors previously without Durant. They won 73 games before Durant got there. It's the reason people were so upset Durant went there. It's the reason I was so upset Durant went there. Because it was the best team in NBA history by record, and they added Kevin Durant. Made things sort of unfair. But... then the narrative started around this idea that they were better without Kevin Durant, which I don't know if I actually heard anyone say. You know, sometimes these straw man arguments become like a talking point thing, because here's what I think the truth of it is. The Warriors are clearly not better without Kevin Durant. That's absurd. No team in NBA history would be better without Kevin Durant. He's a great, great player, right? I do believe you get the best of Steph Curry without Kevin Durant. I do believe you get the best of Klay Thompson without Kevin Durant. I do believe you get the best of Draymond Green without Kevin Durant. That doesn't mean the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant. Those individuals may be better because they have more opportunity. And I also believe the Warriors don't need Kevin Durant. But that doesn't make them better without Kevin Durant. So that became like this running thing. And even Kevin Durant was asked about it. He was asked about it and had to weigh in on it. And you know how he is. So I almost felt bad for him in a sense because he's so involved in social media and the media in general that you know he was aware of what was being said. And I honestly, again, I don't know, Kevin Anthony, did anyone actually hear someone say that the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant? Like, was that something that someone actually said? Can we point to an individual who said that? I don't know if I heard anyone say that. So I'm asking the people in the studio. But I don't think that was a sentence that I heard uttered from the mouth of anyone reputable. So, again, that was almost like a created story. It was like a created story, which happens often. Because you need to fill content in this business. So there's like 24/7 news cycles, and there's shows like this, and there's shows on TV, and there's shows every which way. And podcasts and whatnot. So people need to talk about something. So I think one of those things was, well, could the Warriors actually be better without Kevin Durant? I don't think any rational person ever uttered that. That doesn't mean they aren't really good without Kevin Durant. I say all that because the Raptors win game one of the NBA Finals at home. I said before that series started, before game one, that the Raptors absolutely had to have game one. I mean, to me, game one was the series. If Golden State won game one, I think this is a five-game series. Toronto wins it, and maybe we have a competitive one. Toronto won it, and there were some things about that game that made me go, Like, the Raptors have a lot of length defensively. They made the Warriors struggle in half-court offense. Golden State got most of their points on broken plays, second chances, and the like. Because the Raptors have bigs who are more competent defensively than the Warriors faced. I mean, the defense between the Raptors and the Blazers is such an upgrade, it had to be almost jarring for Golden State. Because the Blazers' bigs were like Myers Leonard and Enes Kanter, and the Raptors' bigs are Pascal Siakam and Marc Gasol. And those guys knew what to do defensively. I mean, Siakam is a heck of an athlete with tremendous length, and Gasol's just a super smart player who's been around the block. You know, one of the better defensive players in recent memory at the big spots. So he was coming up and basically trapping Steph Curry. And Siakam gave them a bunch of trouble, especially in transition. And that's where the Warriors, I think, failed more than anything was their transition defense in game one. They allowed a bunch of easy buckets. So there was enough there defensively from the Raptors that made me go, I mean, even Fred VanVleet was very good in guarding Steph Curry in his minutes. So going forward in the series, I wonder, you know, if that's something that could give Golden State trouble as the series goes along. At the same time, there's plenty, I think, for the Warriors to feel good about after game one, which is the guys that beat them in game one, I think they'd be comfortable allowing to try and beat them the rest of the series. I think Golden State would tell you they do not believe that the guys that beat them in game one will beat them three more times. They do not believe, you know, the Danny Greens of the world are going to be the players who beat them in the series because they held Kawhi Leonard down. You know, they did a very good job defensively against Kawhi Leonard. And I kind of knew that Kawhi was going to be facing a different level of defense. Just like it was probably staggering and jarring for the Warriors to go from the Blazers to the Raptors, it was probably jarring for Kawhi Leonard to see Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green. You know, that's the kind of defense that the Warriors have been deploying against the likes of LeBron James in the past. I always talk, it's like the 1.5 defense, where it's tough when Iguodala is your main defender and Draymond Green is the help defender. That is like a defensive tandem to be reckoned with. And the Warriors know what they're doing in that regard. So they held Kawhi Leonard down, and the other guys beat him. The other guys beat him in game one. And I bet you Golden State would be content with that. And it's a tip of the cap if they lose because Siakam gives them 32 and Gasol gives them 20 and Green gives them 11 and Van Vliet gives them 15 when Kawhi Leonard is held in check. So I think the real takeaway from game one should be a rational one, a calm one, a analytical one, where you say the Raptors do some things defensively that bother Golden State. They've got some length defensively. This is a better team than the Warriors have faced thus far, and a more well-designed team on that end. At the same time, hey, Golden State's probably not in panic mode because they were right in that game. They could have won that game on the road in game one, but the Raptors role players beat them. I think that's the real takeaway from game one. Let's see what the rest of the series does. Instead, it was, oh my God, this is proof that the Warriors need Kevin Durant. Oh my God, this is all. That's what I heard. And that's the kind of thing that makes me like, come on, yo. Can we be like, can we not be wild with the reactions every time? Because it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to go from the Warriors don't need Kevin Durant, this is proof the Warriors don't need Kevin Durant, to the Warriors need Kevin Durant after one game. The Warriors clearly are better with Kevin Durant. Duh. It's irresponsible to say otherwise. You know who Kevin Durant is? He knows who he is. He'll tell you who he is. At the same time, we have enough evidence to know that the Warriors are not desperate for Kevin Durant. They won a championship before Kevin Durant got there. They were a minute away from going back-to-back before Kevin Durant got there. They won 73 games before Kevin Durant got there. They beat the Rockets at the end of that series without Kevin Durant. They destroyed the Blazers without Kevin Durant. Their record without Kevin Durant is great. They lost one game. They lost one game. So, am I right? Or was the reaction appropriate? Do the Warriors need Kevin Durant? Was game one of the NBA Finals proof that the Warriors need Kevin Durant? Because I feel like there was just a lot of people waiting to say that. Just like there was probably a lot of people waiting for the Warriors to have success without Kevin Durant so they could try and spin it in some ludicrous way like they're better without Kevin Durant. Was game one of the NBA Finals proof that the Warriors need Kevin Durant to return in this series? He's expected to return in game three or game four, likely game four. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. It's the Robin Lundberg Show. And it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It is The Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Do the Warriors desperately need Kevin Durant? A couple days ago, they were better without him. Now, they desperately need him. The ridiculousness of the sports media industry on display in one sentence. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, 855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news, there's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Let's go to Michael in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Michael, you're up first here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
You got it.
I completely agree with you. I think the media is making too big of a deal regarding KD. I think Golden State is a well-qualified team. However, I do believe that Toronto will win the series based on the fact of their resume going into the finals. If you look at, they beat the number one team going into the playoffs, the Orlando Magic. They beat, in my opinion, the most...
Wait, the what team going into the playoffs?
The Orlando Magic.
But what did you say before the Orlando Magic? You said the what team going into the playoffs?
The Orlando was the hottest team going into the playoffs.
Okay. I when you said the number one team going into the playoffs, I was just wondering what measuring stick you were using for the description of the Orlando Magic, who were 42-40 on the season. Okay, go ahead.
And then they beat the most versatile team, I think. That potentially could be debatable regarding with Philly. And then the number one team in the league. I mean, four games in a row. I just think Toronto is the better matchup. With or without KD, I believe Toronto will pull this off based on their resume. I think Portland was just, while they had, great superstars, they just were not meant to play the long run in a seven-game series, and they got swept.
Yeah.
In addition to that, Kawhi had a decent game, 23-8-5. I mean, he's not going to have that decent of a game the entire series. He'll probably, continue to go for 30, and they still won. So I just think matchup, overall team, overall resume will put Toronto over over this year and win the championship.
Look, that's fair. I think Golden State was game planned for Kawhi Leonard, and they did a good job against Kawhi Leonard. But as far as the rest of the team's concerned, again, I think it was the role players who did them in. But maybe a lot of us have been sleeping on the Raptors a bit. Maybe I've been sleeping on the Raptors a bit because how much more do they have to prove? I knew they were very good. You mentioned Portland. Like, Portland is not ready for prime time. Portland had a really nice season, but they were never a championship contender. The teams that the Raptors beat, that's an interesting perspective because that Philadelphia series obviously was very, very close. I mean, a few bounces on the rim is what got Toronto past Philly, and those two teams were evenly matched. But Philly is stacked in a sense. I mean, Philly has three top 20-ish players in Embiid and Simmons and Butler. And that doesn't even include Tobias Harris. So that was a heck of a series. Milwaukee, it was impressive what Toronto did with Milwaukee because Milwaukee was, by all measurables, a legitimately great team. Their profile, their statistical profile said that they were a legitimately great team. And after game two, it certainly felt like they were going to take that series and they were going to complete what had been their season. Game one was, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, tight in that series. And then game two, Milwaukee kind of won going away. And you thought, all right, there it is. That's the end of it. And then game three, Toronto almost went down 3-0 in that series. Very darn close to going down 3-0 in that series. And instead, they reeled off four straight. And a lot of that was Kawhi Leonard doing what he does. But the Raptors have a well-constructed team. Masai Ujiri deserves a lot of credit. And I think sometimes in the NBA, we don't pay enough attention to the margins. And he did that. He's filled out that roster in a way where most of the guys who are getting burned for that team are significant contributors or are playing a role in how things go down. He made that Gasol trade to make sure they had him on the roster. And then they got a smart guy who knows how to defend as a big against what Golden State does up top. He's on the team. Siakam was, I think, the 27th pick in the draft. That's a good draft pick. He rounded out the roster with Ibaka. And then he paid attention to how much length matters in the league. Danny Green is long. Obviously, he made the Kawhi Leonard trade. He's long. Siakam's long. Lowry is a big guard at his position. So it's a lot of that is what makes Toronto what they are. You're adding up the total players because we focus so much on stars in the NBA, rightfully so. It's always been a star-driven league. But I think in today's league, it's much, much more difficult than in the past for one player to beat you. Much more difficult because of the three-point shot. In a different era where one star is facing a team and they can trade twos for twos or he can trade threes for twos, it's not the same as a team that everybody on the roster is hitting you over the head with a three-point shot, and you only can do so much as one guy. You know, so I think in the 90s, for instance, it was much easier for one star to beat a team than it is nowadays. And the Raptors have that sort of formula where, you know, they're not going to get beat by one guy. They're not going to get beat by one guy, that's for sure. And that's one of the reasons why people are now speculating that Kevin Durant needs to be back in that series. We'll see. Again, I wouldn't have any crazy reaction to game one of the NBA Finals. I think it shows you that Toronto is well-constructed. They've got that defensive length. And the Warriors are probably happy with the guys that beat them. We'll know a lot more after game two of that series.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
Speaking of pop culture, I'm going to get to some NBA coaching stuff in a second. One with Mike D'Antoni, the other with Doc Rivers. Here's a question regarding pop culture. How much Drake is too much Drake? 855-212-4227. What do you guys think, Kevin, Anthony? How much Drake is too much Drake? Are we there yet?
Are we there? Are we tired of Drake? Yeah. On his antics on the sideline?
See, I would argue...
That doesn't bother me.
I would argue in favor of Drake here. You know, I think Drake is sometimes simultaneously the coolest and lamest person on the planet. But his histrionics, if you will, have only added to the appeal and the intrigue of the series and have kind of created a identity for the Toronto Raptors.
I like him wearing the Del Curry Raptors jersey.
That was pretty funny.
That was pretty cool.
You see Draymond Green was filming himself in the streets of Toronto wearing an OVO shirt, which is Drake's.
No, I did not see that.
Say he was talking a little smack on his Instagram or whatnot. So I think it just adds to the fun of it. But I think Drake just annoys some people.
I think the two biggest frauds are the sports fans. Drake is number one. John Bon Jovi's number two.
Who does John Bon Jovi root for?
A Giant fan, and then all of a sudden he's in Robert Kraft's suite having desserts with Giselle and all that. And
wait, so you can't be?
You're wearing Giant jerseys and you call yourself the diehard Giant fan during the Parcells years, you're selling a Giant stadium wearing, you know, the Kerry Collins jersey, and next thing you know, when the Patriots are winning, you're next to Robert Kraft.
Are the Giants and the Patriots rivals? I know they've played in the Super Bowl, but
I wouldn't say they're rivals, but you
it's
know,
it's not the Cowboys.
No, it's not like the Cowboys, but I think it's ridiculous if you're wearing Giant jerseys and, you know, being on the sidelines during the Super Bowl years, and next thing you know, you're in Robert Kraft's suite. Get it, you're BFFs with Bill Belichick, but come on, dude.
Back
Stick
to Drake.
With your team. Back He's to- a fraud.
All right. I don't think anybody cares about Bon Jovi right now.
But back to Drake, though, like
yeah,
I
back
said.
To Drake. I get the criticism for him in a sense, everything else but the Raptors. But can you really call him a fraudulent fan when it comes to the Raptors?
It's more being obnoxious, I guess. Like,
yeah.
I appreciate his passion and all that, but that's someone I would not want to be next to during a game.
Well, I'm there. Okay, I feel that. Let's go to Sheila in Toronto. Sheila, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on?
Oh, good morning. I just wanted to make a comment on how you said maybe people have been sleeping when talking about the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was listening to your show a couple of weeks ago before the conference finals, and you talked about the Warriors. You went through their whole team. You talked about the Trailblazers. You talked about the Bucks. And I listened for over 10 minutes, and you did not even mention the Raptors. And I thought, hey, wait a minute, is there not four teams left?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, for sure. I couldn't believe that on a national sports show that they didn't even get a mention.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about them now. And didn't I say before that perhaps I was sleeping on the Raptors as well?
Yeah, I'm just adding to that, saying, yeah, you were, and lots of other people.
It's funny, Sheila, because I actually go I go on Toronto radio a lot over the last couple of years, and I've followed this Raptors team pretty closely, so I shouldn't really be sleeping on them. But mm-hmm. some of the stuff that they do well isn't the stuff that pops immediately, right? And as a basketball aficionado, I should be more in tune to it, but I think it's that length defensively, like I mentioned. But it's really cool to me how they've become a thing. Like, it's really cool the atmosphere outside there. I love Toronto, beautiful city. I would live in Toronto, with no hesitation. I think it's why I'm rooting for Kawhi Leonard to stay there, because they've created something that didn't exist in the NBA before. Have you felt the difference in the passion level this year?
Oh, for sure. I mean, but the thing is, I don't think people realize how passionate we have been here. Like, that's we've sold out games for the last 5 years. You know, games have been a sellout. There's for sure people have jumped on the bandwagon. That always happens, right? But the passion this year, it's unreal.
How much credit would you give Drake for that?
Well, you know, Drake is known around the world, so he sure brings a lot of attention to the team. But they made him our team ambassador a few years ago, so that's what he's done. He's promoted the Raptors around the world. I think it's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think for sure. The Raptors are now a much bigger deal than they were before.
Another thing with Drake, but, I mean, how does this guy have – I don't know if you noticed, he had the black armband.
Because he has
Durant and Curry, 35 and 30. Dude, what are you – come on.
I told you he's lame.
You can't do
He's both cool and lame. Like, obviously he's cool, right, because he's super popular and a huge – more even like a pop star than he is like a rap star, right? I mean, he's a pop rap star. It's why the ghostwriting thing has stuck to him a little bit. The Pusha T thing has stuck to him a little bit. But you can't not be considered cool, I suppose, if you're that big. But at the same time, he's got all these lame things about him. And that would be one of them, having the numbers of Steph Curry and Kevin Durant tattooed on yourself. The Del Curry thing was funny though, right? I mean, that was good. Some of the stuff he does is good. You know, so it's a mixed bag, I suppose, there. But it works, and I think it's been good for the league. All right. I was telling you about a couple coaching things. Let me start with the Rockets really quickly. I think they're doing Mike D'Antoni dirty. I think what they're doing to him is not cool. It's kind of wrong. And they're looking for a scapegoat where I don't think there needs to be a scapegoat. I don't think there needs to be a scapegoat because did the Rockets really fail? That's the thing I don't quite understand. I wouldn't say that the Rockets failed. They failed to beat the Warriors. That's obviously true. They failed by the measurement of the NBA championship. That is obviously true. That is a fact. They did not win the NBA championship. They lost to the Golden State Warriors. Facts. Right? But count me in the camp who sees the Rockets being as good as they've been as an accomplishment, not failure. You know, is that Rockets team that talented? Go ahead. Like, when you saw the news earlier this week that everybody was on the trading block for the Rockets, who's the guy that you really want? Who's the guy that you go, oh, that he has a ton of value? They don't have anybody who has any value on that roster. I mean, Eric Gordon is a good player. You would want Eric Gordon on your team, but he's not changing the fortunes of a franchise. Clint Capella is good at what he does, but he's limited. He's limited, especially in certain matchups, and he's on a big contract now. Who else? PJ Tucker is an excellent role player. I love PJ Tucker. He can let you play small. He, you know, hits the corner three. He's tough, but he's a role player. Who else is on that team? Austin Rivers? Gerald Green? Daniel House? The idea that the Rockets are ridiculously loaded is like a fallacy. You know, they got James Harden and Chris Paul. And I'm a little tired of Chris Paul getting disrespected. Like he's not a legendary player. Chris Paul is a great, great player. He's just old. I mean, that's what happens when players get old, especially guards. He's a 34-year-old guard. Of course he's on the decline. A 34-year-old 6-foot-tall guard. How many guards at 6 feet tall were tearing up the league at 34 years old? And he's still a good player. He's just not a great player anymore. Still a good player. But the reason, you know, he's not a trade asset is because he's on a contract. That's huge. But the Rockets had to know what they were getting into, signing him to that contract, they went all in. And good for them. We want teams to go all in, right? They went all in. And now they're paying for going all in. Them's the breaks. That doesn't mean somebody has to be at fault. You can't go all in and then want to blame somebody when it doesn't work out. I mean, they went all in and they were there. They were right there. You know, since Steve Kerr took over coaching Golden State, they've lost exactly one playoff series. One. Everybody knows which one that is. In case you need a reminder, 2016 NBA Finals. I think they might have had a 3-1 lead in that series. I can't quite remember. Pretty sure. Guys, 3-1? Were they up 3-1 in that series? Yeah, 3-1. 3-1 in that series. That is the only time that they have lost. So, the fact that the Rockets took them 7 games last year with Kevin Durant, and I honestly do believe that Houston would have won that series had Chris Paul not gotten hurt. Well, that is an accomplishment. I mean, the Warriors with Kevin Durant are the best team in NBA history, in my mind. So they went head up, and now Iguodala was down for the Warriors, to be fair. But they went head up with the best team in NBA history and almost won. And then this year, they won 2 games from the Warriors. And I know Durant went down. I actually think Durant going down, again, I don't think the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant. That's ridiculous. But I think Durant going down hurt Houston. I do believe that, sincerely. Because I think Houston designed their team in a way where it was so solely focused on beating Kevin Durant and the Warriors that they were prepared to guard them that way. And I've seen Mike D'Antoni on the record saying before that they would almost live with Kevin Durant beating them because they can at least see what's coming there. They can keep that in front of them. And it's not like as many active weapons otherwise. And I think when you removed Kevin Durant from that chessboard, the Rockets' strategy was thrown out of whack and they were on their heels a little bit. And I don't think they were quite prepared for the Warriors without Kevin Durant, when they were built and constructed and totally prepared for the Warriors with Kevin Durant. Now, that's an excuse, I suppose, if you want, but I think it hurt them in that sense. But the last 3 years, the Rockets were 55-27, 65-17, and 53-29. I think with their roster, that's an accomplishment, not a failure. And when it comes to Mike D'Antoni, Mike D'Antoni was clearly ahead of his time philosophically. Clearly. You know, what he did with Phoenix back in the day was in many ways a blueprint for where the league wound up heading. And when the Warriors won their first championship, when they won in 2015, Alvin Gentry was the lead assistant for the Warriors, and he got up on the podium after they won and said, "This is for Mike D'Antoni. This is validation for what Mike D'Antoni believed in." So the guy was ahead of his time as a coach. I mean, he got ridiculed for it at times. And he's had one of the more interesting careers I think I could possibly remember. The ups and downs, right? People don't even remember he was the Denver Nuggets coach. Didn't go well. Then there was the Phoenix situation, which was the huge up. You know, people love that team. Then it was the Knicks, which was mostly down. But there was periods of ups with the Knicks, right? They had, like, this winning streak when Amari first got there, before Carmelo got there, and then they had Linsanity in the midst of it. And then he went to the Lakers, which was almost all down, and it was, like, a disaster, and it felt like his coaching career was over and he was going to wind up disgraced. And then he goes to Houston, and it's been ups. And what's impressed me about him in Houston is he also adapted. He also adapted to what Daryl Morey wants and to having James Harden. Because he's always relied on one ball-dominant player. Maybe that's a criticism of his system and style. But he was also known for the floor being spread and the ball moving and all that. And with Harden, he thought, all right, the numbers say, which is what the Rockets rely on, and the results say, this is working. We're going to keep doing this over and over again and see if he can stop it. And except for against the Warriors, it's worked. And then they got Chris Paul. And what was the question? Can two ball-dominant players like Paul and Harden work? He made that work. So if losing to the Warriors is a sign of failure, then every team that has played the Warriors sans the Cavs in 2016 is a failure. So I just think they're doing Mike D'Antoni dirty, and they're looking for a scapegoat where a scapegoat does not need to be found. So I think Mike D'Antoni deserves better than that. I think he's proven in the right situation. He's a great coach, and I think he's proven over the course of his career that he was a forward-thinking basketball mind. He's almost like a basketball philosopher in many ways, because the critiques of him that are fair are sometimes the smaller in-game stuff. And then there's the not getting over the hump deal. You know, maybe he's sort of the Andy Reid of the NBA, if you will. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. At Robin Lundberg on Twitter. That's RobinLundberg. So I feel that way about Mike D'Antoni. I think they're doing him wrong. But there's also someone who's a proven head coach in the NBA who was done wrong. And he wasn't done wrong by a team. He was done wrong by the league. We'll get to that next. Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.